This weekend, we're talking about power. We're in this series called Tell All Your Friends. And when Jesus went public for the first time, one of the things people noticed about him is he had this power. And it wasn't an intellectual power. It wasn't an academic power. It wasn't an emotional power. It wasn't a power that had to do with position. It was a spiritual power. And something unique about it was this power that he had, it seemed like he could transfer it to other people. So Jesus had this power, but it seemed like he could give this power away to other people. And people started to notice that. And in fact, it's the big idea this weekend. You can live in the power of the Spirit. That's a capital S, so it's really talking about God there. It isn't like a team spirit or a company spirit. And they notice this power about him, and it's not like any other power that they've ever seen. And so the word started to spread. They started to tell their friends about, man, you got to see Jesus, because there's something about him way different than other religious leaders. But what's really different is he's got some kind of power. And not only does he have it, he gives it to other people, and it changes their life. So we're going to read a story today that sort of like gives some credibility to this whole idea. It's in your notes. When the devil had finished all his tempting, he left him, Jesus, for an opportune time. Jesus returned to Galilee in the power of the Spirit, and news about him spread through the whole countryside. He taught in their synagogues, and everyone praised him. So here's what's going on in the story. You know, like now when you get focused on here comes the next year, Jesus has come off of a month of really being focused on God. He like, so I'm going to really be focused on spiritual things. And so he goes away and he does this desert retreat. And so he's like, for a whole month, he's retreating to get focused on his spiritual life. And it's during that time that the devil comes and attacks him. And that's kind of a principle. It's like whenever you try to like get focused on your life, especially with God, that's when the devil will attack you. It's like, you know, you're going to get focused on something at work, or I've got a relationship I want to focus on, or like whenever it is, like because the idea is if I can stop them before they get any traction, they'll get discouraged and they won't try. So Jesus is out. I'm going to get, you know, really get focused on God. And here comes the devil and starts attacking him. And there's a contrast in power that goes on, because the devil has power too. The devil's power is the power to lie. In the book of John, verse 44, in New Testament, it says that he's the father of lies. So his language is lying. So here's how it shows up in your mind. It's like, okay, you know what? This relationship is like, it's been bad for so long. I'm really going to do something about it now. I'm going to get focused on that relationship. And here comes the lie. They're not going to listen to you. You tried that last time. You just got hurt. Lie. Or you think, you know, I'm going to start giving myself at work. I mean, I see where my career is going, and maybe it's not the job that I want, but I haven't had the best attitude, but I'm really going to start like working like I'm working for God down there, really start working. And then here comes the lie. Nobody's going to notice. Everybody's punching the clock down there. Nobody's going to see that you care. Or it happens too with God. You know, it's like, you know, this is, now I'm going to do it. You know, I got a Bible, and I'm going to like go to church, and like this is the year I'm going to get close to God. And then here comes the lie. You've tried that before. You'll never be able to keep that. Last time it lasted 3 weeks. So there is a power that the devil comes. And so Jesus is there, and here comes the devil with all these lies, 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 lies. And Jesus has the power of truth. And he can also transfer that to you. And you notice it says he left him for a more opportune time. Circle that. That's sort of the devil's MO, always looking for opportunities. The devil's a sniper. You know, so how the devil shows up, looking for opportunities. So it's good to check in on occasion and ask yourself this question. Are you creating any opportunities in your life? Because, you know, I mean, it's one thing to accidentally shoot your foot off. It's another thing to aim. And when you create opportunities in your life, it will bring on an attack. And all of a sudden, you know what? It just feels like you get dogpiled. It's like, this is kind of a problem, but man, I am like feeling like I am really getting, you know, like a hit here, man, piled on. Well, that can be a spiritual weight. And it begins because I'm not like paying attention. I create some opportunity, and then here he comes. And so that's happening in this story. Jesus has been in this month really focused on God, and the devil comes and starts to lie, and Jesus doesn't buy any of it, so he has to leave for a more opportune time. So Jesus, you know, he's had like a pretty good month, and he comes out of it. And by the way, whenever you get through a time where you've been under attack and you get through it with a victory, there is such an incredible strength there. And so that's Jesus. He comes in, and he comes into Galilee. Now, Galilee has about 3 million people. It's a big, huge, broad plain, kind of like here, and there's like a lot of big cities there because Jesus was a person that spent a lot of time in pretty big cities. And so he's in Galilee. And Galilee is an interesting place. That's where he decides to go public with his ministry. He's kind of from that area. So he goes public with like he's on tour, and there is zero interest in him. So, you know, when's the last time in your life you're really excited about something, you're going to do something, you know, oh, this is going to be a big thing, and there's like nobody. It's like zero interest. Like none. That's how he started. And there's a reason for it. People in the area of Galilee kind of divided themselves up into two different camps. There had been a dominant religion there for years and years and, you know, like a long, long time, and that was Judaism. And a lot of people were like, they were religious. That's the way they tried to connect with God. And so they were all part of that thing. And there was rules in that, and, you know, social structures, and, you know, there was different types of leverage and power, and that's all going over here in Judah. Then there was the people that were so fed up with that, they didn't want any part to do with that religion at all, and they didn't know where else to go, so they kind of put God on the back burner. And as the years go by, there's like two different camps in Galilee. There's the people like, we're really super religious, and this is the way it is, it's got to be this way, and that's just the way it is, you know. And this people's over here, it's like, they're like, you know, you're flipping them the burr. They're like, I ain't never doing that. You know, that's crazy. And I'm going to do my own thing now. And I know how to run my life. And so Jesus decides to go public. They're not very strategic. He should have been on better demographics and marketing study, because he steps out and nobody's interested at all. He throws his first Bible study, you know, and everything. And like nobody comes. You know, a couple of his brothers and his sister, they always show up. But that's it. Until a very small group of people begin to recognize a power. And they see this power, and it starts to spread. So he's saying really different things, and he seems way, way different than any religion, but it's the power that he has. There's some kind of power. I can't quite figure out what that power is. And that begins to spread. And, of course, that doesn't spread by itself. People spread that. And in our services, okay, here, so there's always lots of different people starting from different points of process. And so let me just talk to the people that are Christ followers for a second. Part of what we do is we spread the news. That's part of what we do. That's why we always put these in the program. These are like little seeds that you plant around the community. You just hand these to somebody and say, hey, listen, if you're interested in, you know, something going on, comes out in a conversation, you know, you spread. Because that's how things spread. They spread by people. They don't just spread by themselves. And people started to spread it. Now, I know it can be discouraging and awkward. It's like, you know, I tried that last time. And it can almost be like, well, somehow it'll happen without my participation. But here's the thing. As Jesus started off, it starts to spread by people. There's different people that they just start to speak about it and spread it. And here's what it looks like. I brought this. Someone at Eastlake wrote this little note. Here's what she says. A mere invitation from a friend willing to expose herself as a Christian changed my life. I'd grown up in church, but having a relationship with God was not a concept I was familiar with. In my world, God was someone I prayed to at the end of the day, and that was about it. When I was 15 years old, a close friend of mine told me her story and shared with me about her church. She described it as a place she felt safe and loved and connected to other people. She offered to take me to church with her if I wanted to go. One Easter morning, I decided to accept her offer. I felt God moving in my life, and for the very first time, when I went to church. Over the next few months and then years, I was able to connect with godly leaders, genuine friends, and most importantly, with Jesus. My life mission, my passion for God, began in a school cafeteria where a local church had set up shop. I learned about Jesus and his love for me in that room. And I've never forgotten that I ended up in that cafeteria, that church, because a friend who loved me wanted me to know God cherished me too. She was willing to take a risk and invite. Your invitation to a friend, she's speaking now, may create an awkward moment, it may get disregarded, or it may change someone's life and help them connect with Jesus. Take it from me. It's worth the risk. So it can start with one of these. You plant one of these, and the word begins to spread. And that's what's happening in this story with Jesus. He's in Galilee, and as he's in Galilee, the word begins to spread. And so let's see what happens next. Let's read a little bit more. It starts in, he went to Nazareth, where he'd been brought up, and on the Sabbath day, he went into the synagogue, as was his custom, and he stood up to read. So now he's back at his hometown, Jesus, and the first thing he does is he goes to church. And have you ever had one of those times where you end up in a bar or a club, and the only reason you're there is because a certain band is playing? So like that's a place you never, ever go there. That isn't a place you ever go with your friends. But you hear about one of your like favorite bands, and that band is going to be there. So you and some other people decide, well, we don't care about the club, but we're going to go there. So you end up there because of who is there. And Jesus goes to church, and all these different people show up at church that day because they want to see him. So all the, and again, remember, there's two big groups in this area. There's the, you know, we go to church and like, you know, we're all about that. And then it's like, we don't want anything to do with church. Well, all these people went to church that day. So there's this huge, massive crowd there of people that are all very, very different. And they're at very different points in how they're processing their spirituality. And it would have been very, very different now than church normally on a weekend, because all these people are there. And Jesus knows what he's doing, because church should be for everyone. So all these people are there, and it would have looked so incredibly different, because here's how church looked in that day. Church, if you went to church, everybody kind of looked the same, and they thought the same, and they sort of thought the same things, and they had the same perspective on life, and you know, they kind of had the same future in mind, and they raised their families the same way, and they even kind of talked the same way, and they even maybe came from same sort of families, and everybody was the same. And if you weren't the same, you hid that so you wouldn't be pushed out. You put on some kind of a front so everybody could see it, because everybody needed to be the same. And then this mob walks in, and they're way, way different. Nobody's got a Bible. Nobody knows how to sing the hymns. Everybody hates the pews. You know, they can't understand even why they're there, but they came to see Jesus. And everybody's in this room together. They're all there at the same time. And that Jesus is okay with that, because like he knows that's what church should be. It should be a place where it's everyone's church. In fact, here's how we look at it at Eastlake. Check it out. I have a little diagram here for you. So we kind of see it like this here. There's people out in the community that there's very few bridges for them. Maybe they're not interested at all or whatever, but they're hardly ever in this room or any other room ever. And then there's people that are in the crowd, and this is kind of like the condition of your heart. So there's people in the crowd, and somehow they got here. You might be here today, and you're like, I don't even know how I got here today. I mean, somebody invited me. It's the first time I've been in a long, long time. And kind of that's where you are. You're checking it out. You're kicking the tires of Christianity, and like that's where you are. And then after a while, people move to what you could call, look at all the C's there. Isn't that so clever? And so, you know, congregation. And the congregation is the people that they show up fairly often. You know, they're maybe here like two or three times, or maybe three times a month, and they're hanging out, and they might have grabbed a Bible on the way out quickly so nobody saw it. And, you know, they're just starting to know the songs, and they're okay with that. Maybe they go to the rescue mission, or they help us out somewhere else, but they're, you know, they're kind of around a little bit. And then the next level is the committed, and they're really somehow, like, their life has like, got connected with Jesus in a way that they get that a church can make a difference, so they're here somewhere else, and they're like, that's where they are, and their finances reflect that, their time reflects that, and that's sort of where they are. And then there's the core, and that's the people that they're devoted to Jesus. So for the most part in their life, I mean, like, them and Jesus work it out. Jesus and I do life together because we're devoted to each other. Okay. Now, we kind of move around that a little bit, but great churches always have this going on at all different levels. There's all kinds of different people around. Okay. So Jesus has that type of a gathering going. All these different people are in church that day, and he's back in his hometown, and people are whispering, and all of a sudden he stands up, and he starts to read. He literally stands up and says, hey, could you hand me a Bible? And someone hands him a Bible, and he finds a place in it, and he starts to read, and I bet you could have just heard a pin drop. And he reads a part of Scripture that talks about this power and how it affects our hearts, specifically how it affects our attitude. In fact, you can write in your notes, attitudes become your actions, and that's for sure. I mean, when my attitude changes, my action changes, and then my life changes. So what he's saying here, what you're going to see is that there's a power that Jesus can transfer that goes deeper than how I behave. It gets to the core of why I behave. And that's this power. So let's read about it. A scroll of the prophet Isaiah was handed to him. He asked for a Bible. Unrolling it, and that day they had these things all rolled up. You know, it wasn't like our Bibles today. So he unrolls the whole thing like this. He starts to read. He found the place where it's written, "The Spirit of the Lord is on me, because he has anointed me to preach the good news to the poor." So now Isaiah, he lived 700 years before Christ. And interesting enough, when he lived in a place that had the same dynamic going on. Lots and lots and lots of people, very, very focused on religion. Lots and lots of people that didn't want anything to do with it at all. And so Jesus picks this spot and he says this, and people would know it, and they'd be going, "Wait a minute, that sounds like my life." And if you'll try the Bible, one of the things you'll discover is you'll reread it and go, "Wait a minute, that sounds like my life. I'm going through that kind of stuff. That's the kind of stuff I've been thinking about." So he grabs everybody's attention right off. They're like, he reads this thing, and they're like, "Wait a minute, that sounds like the neighborhood I live in. That sounds like the people I work with." You know, these like, so he's got everybody's attention now. And, you know, he grabs their attention, and once he has their attention, he starts to talk about something that distinguishes him from anybody else and why this power is different. Jesus did not come to give spiritual advice. He came to proclaim news. And there's a big, big, big difference between advice and news. Let me show you an example. In World War II, there was a Scottish paratrooper. His name was MacDonald. So he's from Scotland. He's a Christ follower guy. He's a paratrooper. Plane gets shot down behind enemy lines in Germany, and he gets put in a concentration camp with another guy that gets captured that's Scottish. Now, they put him in this concentration camp, and the first thing they notice is there's this huge fence down the middle of the concentration camp. And when they get in there, they realize why. There's all these people that are British, and there's all these people that are English, and for some reason, the Germans won't let them communicate or in any way connect. So they have this, you can't go anywhere near this fence, and they keep these groups completely separate. British over here, you know, American over here. And they take these two Scottish guys, and they make them chaplains. One guy's for the British, and one guy's for the Americans. Now, the Americans had built a little homemade wireless radio, and they were getting news from the outside about the war. But they were never allowed to share it because these two groups come together until the Germans told these two chaplains that they could meet at this fence every day and talk a little bit. They both spoke Gaelic. So even though the Germans could speak German, English, and French, they couldn't understand Gaelic. So what would happen is this MacDonald guy would bring news that they heard on the radio, and he would share it in Gaelic with the other guy, the Scottish guy, and then he would take it back to the British soldiers. So they had news. And one day they're listening to their little wireless handmade, you know, homemade radio, and they hear that the Germans have surrendered. So MacDonald goes to the fence, and he tells his buddy, and his buddy goes back, and he knows what's going to happen. I mean, the barracks just erupts with shouts of joy, and they are just like praising and shouting and screaming. They're so happy, you know, that they hear the news that the war is over. And he said for the next 3 days, he said every soldier in that camp had a smile on their face. He said they were actually waving to the Germans with their dogs. I mean, they just were, I mean, the news, like, you know, and on the fourth morning when they wake up, they all get up, and they something's really, really different, and soon they discover every German's gone. The camp has completely been evacuated. They've all left during the night. And all the gates were closed, they weren't locked. And so all those soldiers walk out a free person. But years later, when MacDonald is telling the story, he said, "You know what?" He said, "We were actually free 3 days earlier when we got the news." And what I want to remind you is that there is a power of news that's way different than religious advice. When God speaks news into your life, and he knows news that you don't know, He can share news with you that you don't know. Those prisoners, the Brits, they had no idea what the news was. And there's things about your life that you don't know. And when God shares the news, so here's our first thing. What's different about the power? It's not, Jesus is not a guru. He doesn't give spiritual tips. He shares news. And news has a completely different power. That's what this is saying. He starts off talking about poor, poverty. And I know we're all concerned about that. And I also get that poverty here is so different than poverty in other places of the world. And there's the new poverty in our nation. People had to go bankrupt and lose their houses. And there's a new poverty. And so I understand that. But this is even broader. This is talking about a poverty mentality. This is talking about an attitude that I have when I feel like I'll never have enough. What is it that you want and you feel like you'll never get enough of it? You know, I'm never going to have enough loyalty from the people that I love. I'm never ever going to have enough money to make myself feel secure. I'm never going to have enough education or credentials to get the job that I really want. I will never feel forgiven enough. I'll never ever be able to do enough to make them know that I'm sorry. It's poverty mentality. It's like an area of my life that I have this huge bucket, and there's a big hole in the bottom, and no matter how much you pour into the bucket, it just will not, more, it won't fill up. Because listen, a poverty mentality is want. It's an attitude of want. And listen to this now. And want is never satisfied by more. So, it becomes frustrating in life, and it becomes confusing because you just keep more into that bucket. Love me more. Proof. And you keep pouring into that bucket, and it's never filled. It's never satisfied. And you're like, what the heck? One of the things that will make you the most angry in life is when you want something different and it's not changing. That's depressing. I've discovered in life, when I really want something to be different and nothing changes, it's depressing. Which causes me then to get angry. You can live from two different attitudes. Wanting, or you can live from willing. And I've seen this just in my own life. When I'm wanting, I'm usually not doing anything to have anything occur in my life that I desire. I just want it. So I don't feel close to God, and I don't feel like He cares about me. You know, in fact, I'm actually mad at God because He's not giving me what I want. But I'm not doing anything at all, but willing. See, want is poverty, but willing brings provision. Because when I'm willing in my life, I start to make a plan, and there's some steps occurring. And I win some, lose some, but I'm moving forward, and now all of a sudden there's hope that I actually might have what I desire. And so now I have hope, and I'm moving somewhere, and things start to come together, and God brings provision, and all of a sudden I have life going on because I'm willing. And so there's a big difference, want and willing. And let me say this to you. You might think, I'm going to change right now then. Sign me up for willing. Here's what's happening. What's happening in this scripture is saying you need power to move from wanting to willing. You need power. It takes a lot of power to be stuck in wanting, to like be in self-pity and like nothing's happening for me and everybody else gets stuff and you're not going anywhere, so you have no hope, so you're depressed and you're angry and you're more angry about your situation, and then someone comes and says, you just need to try harder. You're like, oh, yeah, okay, that really sucks, that doesn't work. And so, and you're just stuck right here, and you think, I just got to do this, I just got to buck up, I just have got to do this, and that's the wrong way to look at it. The right way to look at it is to go to God and say, God, I need some power. Because I am so stuck in a poverty mentality in this area of my life. And I'm lacking. I need the power to be willing. Because wanting is poverty and willing is provision. And it does work that way with money. Jesus does hit on, and probably just like in here, anytime you're in church, and whoever's the preacher guy starts talking about money, here he goes again. That's probably what happened to Jesus. He brings up poverty, and money. And I'm sure people thought, now, Jesus, don't go there. You know, don't be talking about my wallet. Don't be talking about my purse. I mean, I thought you were different than those other religious leaders. But here's the thing. You can get stuck in a poverty mentality when it comes to money and finances. You can be stuck in want. I really want to be generous, and I really want to be able to help people, but I really want to feel secure about my future and what's going to happen with my finances, but I want to give and support what God's doing. I want to see everything go forward with my money, but I want to. I really do want to. And you can get stuck right there. And willing is an entire different thing. And listen, when you have a poverty mentality when it comes to money, when you're stuck in wanting when it comes to money, it doesn't matter how much money you have or how little money you have. It will never be right and enough because it's an attitude. There's lots of people that we would consider poor that are stuck right here. It has nothing to do with their bank account. It's everything to do with their heart. We get stuck in the math. It's a heart issue. So he does bring that up. He definitely does say, so wherever you are in your finances, good to check in from occasion and go, hey, when it comes to money, when it comes to my finances, like, you know, does it ever seem like I have enough? Or maybe I need God's power to make a shift. So I'm just saying. So here's the first part about his power. How are you doing? Where do you have a bucket in your life? And you're like taking a pretty good shot at filling it up. You got it all organized, you got a person picked, and they're doing this, and you're filling it up, filling it up, filling it up, filling it up. You've been doing it for months, filling it up. Oh, it's going to be different next time. They're going to change. Fill. And then, you know, all the time you look in the bucket, you're like, what the heck? Nothing in the bucket. Yeah. Want is never satisfied by more. Okay? Now look at the second thing. Flip it over there, and there's another thing there. Power changes your situation. He has sent me, Jesus talking again, he has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind, to release the oppressed, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. So Jesus talking here, and those little blanks there, right in the word freedom right off the bat. I love this story. So it's a story about this big, huge elephant. And they see this big, huge elephant at a circus, and this family's walking by, and this little kid sees this elephant. He's observant, you know, like little kids. They see everything. It's like, and what he notices is this big, enormous, ginormous elephant has a little tiny rope tied to its ankle, and it's just like put in the ground with a little wood stake. He says to his dad, you know, how could that elephant could pull that out of there? Now the whole family's looking at it, and so they're like, how could this be? Well, the elephant trainer comes by, and they ask him, they say, how is this elephant staying here with that little rope and it's just staked into the ground? He says, oh, let me tell you the story of how we train elephants. When they're little tiny baby elephants, we put a huge rusted anklet on them. And just like the most durable chain ever. And then we hook it to a cement ball. And we give them about 3 feet of room because we know they're going to want more room than that. But every time the little elephant pulls away, that big rusted like bracelet tears into their ankle. And every time they move, this is so unpolitically correct, but it wasn't my circus. So anyways, so they're pulling, you know, they're pulling like this, and it just cuts up the ankle. And what they learn is they will never be free. So the elephant grows up and grows up, and we keep it there and it grows up. And then when it becomes an adult elephant, we just use a little tiny rope. And as soon as it makes a move and just feels the slightest little touch of rope onto that ankle, it stops. And a lot of us are stuck right there. The elephant could be free, but it won't be free because of an injury. Still chained up. Where in your life did you feel it the last time? You started to pull, I'm going there. Man, this time I'm going there. And then you feel just the slightest thing. You're like, no, I'm not going there. That hurts too bad. And why is it that an old injury can make a new occurrence feel as painful as the old injury? Even you can look at it and go, it's just a rope. I know it's just a rope. But everything's like saying, way too painful. In this part of the scripture, he's talking about freedom for prisoners. So a specific type of people, you know, a prisoner, there are lots of different types of prisoners. There's prisoners that are now, you know, they've gone through the whole process and now they're in jail, they're in prison. And You know, they maybe think, you know, they're innocent. Maybe they are, but that's where they still, you know, they still are. Or maybe they're guilty, whatever the case is. But they're prisoners that are in prison. So what he's saying is, he's saying the people that have a situation where they're really locked up, they really are, they can experience an attitude of freedom. And then the other types of prisoners, how about the ones that they've been arrested, but they haven't gotten to court yet, so they don't know the outcome. So anything in your life right now that, you know, it's not looking like it's going to be good, like a big thing's happened, but you really don't know how it's going to be turning out yet. So it's those type of prisoners, too. Like they're on their way to finding the result, the outcome. And then there's these people. I'm a prisoner. I'm a former prisoner. I used to be in prison. But I still see myself as a prisoner. Jesus says, regardless of the condition of your heart in any of those areas, wherever you fall, you can experience freedom. So you might actually like be locked up. You might be waiting to find out if it's going to go good or bad, or you might have been locked up. I have free. You can experience my power, freedom, in any of those situations. Now write the word sight. And notice what it says here. Recovery, circle that word, recovery of sight for the blind. You know what that means? They used to be able to see. What Jesus is saying is, I can restore your vision. What is it you used to be able to see happening in your life that you can't see anymore? You used to be able to see it. You used to be able to see like a really good job, or you used to be able to see a relationship put back together, or you know, you used to be able to see a way that your family might go, and you used to be able to have a vision for it. You used to be able to see it, and maybe like as your like your kids were growing up, you could see it so clearly, but you can't see it now. I used to be able to see like myself with a family, and we're going to have everybody together, and then circumstances happen, and now you can't see what you used to be able to see. He's saying he can restore that. That's a big power. Because when you lose, like when you lose vision, you begin to perish. And that's what he's saying. He said, for everybody, like he said, for everybody who used to be able to see it so clearly. I mean, we all grow up saying, well, if Abraham Lincoln could become president, I could become an astronaut. And we find out we can barely ride our bike. And you start to lose vision. So I'm asking a question now. Think, put yourself in there. What did you used to be able to see? But now you're looking at it, not now, man. You know, I'm 35 years old and I tore up a lot of road. I can't be that now. I'm not going to be Miss America no more. Listen. Jesus is saying, I can restore what you can no longer see. And that's power. And then here's the last one is release. Release the oppressed. There was a guy in my neighborhood years ago, a long, long time ago, even in another city, an older guy, and he liked those handheld radios. He was all Mr. Handheld Radio guy, breaker, breaker, breaker. You know, he was that guy. I was like, hey, dude, we're on the cell phone now. But anyway, he was an older guy. So he loved doing that. I'd go over once in a while and hang out with him. But here's how I met him. We were walking right in the beginning of our little street there. We'd walked up, and he's coming down the sidewalk, and we were meeting right in front of my house on the sidewalk, and I'm doing some stuff in my yard now. And he starts chatting with me. And he's an older guy. He's got to be in his 80s, you know. And we start to talk a little bit. And then, of course, you know, here's what always happens to me. I don't know about how you feel about like what you do, but it's always the same question. Well, what do you do for a living? You know, and you want to say, well, I'm a pastor. But, you know, if you say that, everybody's like, oh, my God, like I'm moving, you know. So anyways, so, you know, I'm a pastor. I work at a church. And sure enough, he's like, I don't set foot in one of those places. And I was like, okay, it'll be a great talk, you know. So I just did the normal thing. I said, how come? He goes, well, I'll tell you how come. He said, I used to go to a church long, long time ago when our kids were little. And that particular church was building a new building. So they told everybody in the church, you know, that they wanted them to give money so they could have this new building. He said, I didn't have any problem with that. Because, but we were in a position where I really couldn't do much more. I didn't know how I was going to. I hadn't decided yet. He said, but our kids went to the little school that they ran. And one day, my son comes home with a report card. And he's got, like, you know, all D's and F's. And he said, I thought, what's happening here? My son's like an A and B student. And he's like, Daddy, I don't know. I did the same work and everything. So he goes with his wife, and they go down and they see this young teacher. And they sit down and they said, we're really concerned. I mean, he's dropping from A's and B's to D's and S. What's going on? And she said, well, I don't know what's going on. I don't know what's happened to him. And I graded all the stuff and I added it up. He's got D's and F's. And they're like, well, can you, tell us what's happening? Like, what do we need to do to help him or something like that? And she said, I don't know. I don't know what to do about it. I just know he got D's and F's. And they're like, wow, she's really kind of freaking out. You know, it's just like, I'm just telling you, he's got D's and F's. And I'm like, well, all right. I guess we'll have to figure it out. And as they're walking out, she bursts out in tears and says, they made me do it. They made me do it. And he stopped and said, made you do what? He said, the leaders in this church, they told me that whoever's family is not giving, I have to give their kids D's and F's. And he told me, he goes, that was the last time I ever set foot in a church. And I thought, I get that. And this type of oppression comes in churches, it comes in families, it comes in jobs where, you know what oppression means? It means there's some system that's pressing down on you and causing you hardship. And it's so much bigger than you, you can't do anything about it. You're either a little kid or you're in some kind of a economic structure or you're in some kind of a religious one and they're just pressing you, man, and making it harder and harder. Jesus said it. He said, I get where you guys are coming from. He's speaking to the church leaders. You like to put big, heavy burdens on people and load them down and then you don't lift a finger to help them. Now, wherever you're coming from, like whatever oppression has hurt you, Jesus says he has a power that can release you. You can't think your way out of that. You can't medicate your way out of that. You'll need power to be free. And here's what he's saying here, the year of the Lord's favor. The good news is, and you can write it in, you can have a new perspective. So here's Jesus in this story. You know, he takes everybody to church and everybody shows up. This whole place is filled with every kind of a person under the sun. They're all sitting there. Some people are like, you know, I got to check my iPhone and I got to look at my messages. And the people over here are like, you know, what's cooking for lunch? And these people over here are like, what in the heck is he talking about? And everybody's there at the same time. And other people are like, no way, I didn't even know God cared about me. No one ever told me that. So this is all going on at the same time. And then Jesus sits, like he sits down and everybody's like, yeah, okay. And essentially, my paraphrase, here's what he says. He says, do you want that power? In that story, he looks at everybody from all the way around. He just says, do you want that power? I have that power. Do you want that power? And that's the same for our story today. Some of you have just been grinding out life, man. Do you know that oftentimes Christianity gets confused to be about restraining my heart? And it's not. It's power that will change my heart. There's a huge difference between restraining my heart and having my heart changed. And it begins with power. It's a power that made the word spread. People are like, no way. So in that story and in our story, it's the same question. Do you want that power? Some area of your life, do you want the power that can move you from wanting and like poverty to willing and provision? Do you want to be free that something that has you locked up? Do you want to see something that you no longer can see? Do you want to be released from something way too big that has harmed you? Do you want that? So, why don't we say a prayer? If you close your eyes, I'll say a last prayer, and then Clarice will take us home with our connection cards. But again, please let that just sort of ring in your soul. Do you want that power? And if you want that power, I'm going to say a prayer that everybody, you know, could relate to. But as I'm saying my prayer, it's your chance in the privacy of your own heart to say yes or no. And please don't let the opportunity pass to say, yes, I want that power. Jesus, when in this story, it's amazing to talk about your past when you're still alive. But in this story, you know, people were amazed at your power, and then you broke it down for them. You said, oh, it's powerful. And it's a power that I have that I can transfer to you. And so for everybody in this room, Lord, regardless of how they have arrived here today, I pray it become crystal clear, yes or no. Yes or no. Do you want the power of Jesus in your life to change your heart? Make it clear, Lord, and grant us the power to say yes. In your name, Jesus. Amen.